Chapter 1. The Mammoth. There are two things in my existence that I cherish above all others. The first is love, which I have often found fleeting and disappointing. The second is freedom. Until I walked among the people that call themselves Emerson, I do not truly believe that I understood what that meant. To the Emerson, freedom is everything. Because of their wisdom, I now feel the wind and taste the rain, and my heart is content. Wodenars the Wanderer. Sylvanier 5476. Kulani sat bareback atop his brown bay, surveying the unending expanse of the low rolling hills of the green savanna that stretched to the horizon in every direction. A cool breeze gently stroked his face like the soft linens his mother used to wear. The memory brought with it a slight pang in the pit of his stomach. He missed her. It would have been easy for him to let melancholy take him down the path of those sad memories, even so many years later, but not today. He had wild hare to hunt. The shamans of his village wanted wild hares for stew as the evening meal, and Kulani would not fail in his duty. He glanced to his left and inspected his hunt pack. 10 young men, boys, really, sat in silence on their own blacks or bays, searching the tall grasses for any sign of movement that might give away the location of the elusive hares. Of course, Kulani already knew exactly how many hares there were nearby and where they were, but he preferred to keep that information to himself for now and let his boys work. He had a special connection with animals that not even the shamans could explain, a gift or endowment from the gods, as they referred to it. Kulani could feel the energy of the animals around him, know their feelings, and interpret their disposition toward him and others. It was a great advantage when hunting, as they were now, and his hunt pack knew it. However, they also accepted that they needed to stay sharp and focused without depending on him to do their work for them. So he waited and watched with them. Kulani admired how magnificent his men looked on their mounts, almost as if cast with a mold. Each had the lean build of a runner, the dark ebony skin of one who has spent his life outdoors, and short black hair cut thin enough to see the shape of the skull beneath. Each of them wore a cape of his own making, from the skin of a harter beast, saber cat, or mountain wolf, that fluttered idly over his bare shoulders and back, and they wore leather leggings with sturdy leather boots lovingly fabricated by their mothers. Kulani's own cape was from the hide of a great lion, and he decorated it with clusters of feathers that he hung from the cape's loose ends. He always had a propensity for feathers. He didn't know why. They made him feel calm and content somehow, like the choker he wore around his neck adorned with beads, shells, and more feathers, a gift from his father. His men displayed their own jewelry with charms carved from bone and ivory. They were mostly trophies from memorable hunts. This was his hunt pack, and he was their hunt master, and they were a fine-looking group indeed. "The rain is coming," the man next to him said quietly. Kulani looked up at the dark clouds moving swiftly overhead.
"Not today, Rabiku. They will come tomorrow." "Too bad," Rabiku replied. "I wanted a bath."
Trying hard not to laugh out loud, Kulani glanced over to see his friend's broad, smiling face daring him to do so.
"Rabiku, you will be a man soon, and you will have to learn to bathe more often than when it rains. Otherwise, you will never find a wife."
Somehow, Rabiku's smile broadened even more. Kulani's friend was known for his big, toothy smile and implacable sense of humor that often manifested itself in surprising ways.
"Then I will marry a goat."
The others chuckled quietly at that. Kulani rolled his eyes. "Your mother would..." His reply was interrupted by a terrifying cry of pain carried on the wind. It came from the north, just beyond a rise in the terrain. Kulani was sure it was an animal, but he was too far away to sense what it was. As quickly as his thigh muscles twitched at the flanks of his bay, a thought went out to his mount, spurring it into forward motion, and his pack quickly followed.
Kulani had a special relationship with his horse, as did every Amazon warrior.
But the fact that he could share its thoughts and know its condition intimately made the relationship symbiotic. He called his mount Wind Dancer for his impressive speed and agility that few other horses in his tribe could match. Wind Dancer proved it again today by swiftly cresting the grassy hill before any of the others, and there they stopped. In the shallow valley below, a desperate scene was unfolding. A female mammoth, only recently delivered of a baby calf and in a much weakened state, was enraged and frantically fending off a pack of 5 jackals. She was positioned protectively over the calf, which was lying on the ground covered in fluid and blood, struggling to stand. Despite her courageous efforts, the jackals had nearly brought the fight to an end. The calf's ears, trunk, and tail were shredded from attempts by the jackals to drag the baby away from its defiant mother, she herself bleeding from 100 wounds all over her long-haired hide and losing blood quickly. She could have given up the calf and saved herself. Instead, she fought to protect it. Kulani could feel her exhaustion and how quickly she was running out of energy to keep up the defense. The mammoth staggered to turn in one direction or another in an effort to face a jackal, only to be hit from the opposite direction by another. Yet, to her credit, there were 2 dead jackals at her feet, and 1 severely crippled and urgently crawling away from the deadly animal.
Most Emizin would not have interfered with the life and death struggle they witnessed.
This was a display of nature in its ugliest raw form, and it should have been up to the spirits to intervene if they wanted a different outcome.
Kulani was no typical Emizin.
He could feel the desperation, fear, pain, and sadness from the new mother, as well as the single-minded ferocity of the jackals. Kulani dug his heels into his mount, and Wind Dancer sprang forward at a fast gallop with the pack following close behind. This was not the first time they intervened with an event in nature, and so far the spirits had never punished them for it. Still a distance away, the great mammoth finally collapsed, and 3 of the jackals pounced to finish her off.
The remaining jackals ran in toward the calf to drag it away from its mother's kicks and rolls, her attempt to right herself again.
It was not to be. In full gallop, Kulani loosed his arrows, and they found their targets without fail. Something inside him always asserted itself when he was in a state of heightened action, giving him clarity and focus beyond what others considered normal. Even when his arrows seemed to stray far from their mark, he could somehow will them to take the right course. It was almost as if he were releasing a part of himself, something inside him that he didn't realize he was restraining until he needed it.
The jackals, in a wild frenzy, did not recognize their fate until the Emizin were upon them, and all 5 were pincushioned with arrows before Kulani and his pack stopped their mounts next to the fallen mammoths. The calf was severely injured, but still alive. The mother was in much worse shape. She had lost too much blood and suffered wounds that would not heal in time to save her. She lay on her side taking rapid, labored breaths, fearful of the men who sat on their horses nearby. Kulani could sense it all, and he motioned to the others to back away while only he approached on foot. Drawing closer, he willed feelings of safety and comfort upon the mother to calm her. The mammoth's breathing slowed, and she relaxed. It would not be long now. Kulani walked to the fallen calf and helped it to stand. It would live if he could get it back to the village quickly enough. Slowly, he helped it to its mother's side. The calf was very weak. It had to find its strength, and Kulani sensed that the mother knew what she needed to do. Barely did she have the strength to shift so that the calf could suckle for the first time in its short life. The milk and the comfort of her long trunk lying gently over her baby's side would be the mammoth's final act of maternal instinct. Kulani felt it all, and for the first time he experienced a new emotion from an animal that he did not know they could conceptualize. Gratitude. The emotions were overwhelming. He had never sensed a connection with an animal so powerfully before. Something had changed. And then she died. He felt the mammoth's spirit leave her body to join the others among the stars. The hunters looked on in silence as Kulani wept. Kulani was not ashamed, nor did he regret his display of raw emotion when he could not save an animal he thought died unnecessarily. It wasn't the first time his hunt pack had witnessed the spectacle of his sentiments, and likely not the last. They sat quietly with legs crossed in the shorter grass and waited respectfully. Not one of them would move until he was back with them again. They would wait until they starved, such was their devotion to him.
Grief was always the hardest emotion to deal with, and he almost considered it a curse that he felt it so acutely. He could hunt a hare or a harter beast and feel no remorse at all. Perhaps he knew that the spirits had already chosen the life that would be sacrificed for his tribe's nutriment and survival. Kulani wanted to believe that was the case. He could at least rationalize his feelings if it were true. No, it was not a curse. It was a gift, a beautiful gift that was born in him because of his mother. She was once a powerful shaman, highly respected in their tribe. The spirits returned her to the gods a few years ago when she fell into a deep ravine foraging for herbs in the mountains. By the time she was found by the other shamans traveling with her, she was too far gone to be helped. It was a hard thing for a young child to deal with. From when he was very young, his mother taught him to embrace his gift and learn to use it.
She had also just begun to teach him the ways of the Amazon and the importance of reverence to the nature spirits.
He missed her deeply. The young mammoth stirred from suckling his dead mother's milk. Although badly injured, he had energy coursing through his body, and he stood on his own. This one had a strong spirit inside of him, thought Kulani, and he knew he had to get the little beast back to the tribe if the mammoth was going to live to see another sunrise.
"Rabiku," Kulani called out to his friend, "prepare a litter for the calf. I will take him to Frinya."
Rabiku was not only Kulani's friend, he was also his second in authority of the hunt pack. They were the same age and had been close friends since the day they were old enough to walk. Rabiku could easily have led his own hunt pack, was even offered one by the elders, but he always said that the place where he was happy was by Kulani's side. He knew better than anyone the emotional toll that Kulani's gift took on him. They spoke about it many times when they were alone together. "Are you well, my friend?" Rabiku asked.
"I am. Some animals have a stronger sense of themselves than others, and some seem to feel emotion that is almost as real as our own, beyond just instinct. I have never felt it stronger than I did just now." Kulani always felt better when he spoke about it.
"Then let us help you bring the calf back to the village and feed it well. It will grow large like its mother, and you will be comforted by that."
Rabiku smiled, and Kulani couldn't help but smile back at his friend. His friend understood, even better than his own father could.
With the help of his comrades, Kulani built a sturdy frame and then carefully secured the calf on the litter, attaching it low to reed-woven ropes he strapped to his mount. To keep the mammoth calm, he reached into its mind and encouraged it to sleep. An animal of its size would quickly demolish the litter if it panicked or struggled. "Take the meat from the mother and send Gaia and Yani to hunt the hare in the long grass. The shamans cannot be too upset with my interference if they have a belly full of stew." Kulani mounted. He was not worried about his sturdy bay. It was 15 hands high, with a beautifully arched neck, pronounced withers, a thick body, and thin legs.
Amazon horses had tremendous stamina for long hunts and exceptional agility to chase down prey. Kulani might have to stop to rest Wind Dancer a dozen times before he reached the village, but he sensed his mount was up to the task. Rabiku laughed and patted Kulani's shoulder.
"Be well, brother. I will see you when we return."
Then he walked over to where the hunt pack stood next to their horses and relayed Kulani's orders. Kulani departed without so much as a glance back. He didn't want to see any part of the mother mammoth butchered. The emotions of her departure were still fresh in his mind. He could only take comfort in the knowledge that by the time he reached the village, his feelings would be nothing more than a vague memory. Later, he would happily consume the meat along with the rest of the tribe. It was strange the way the spirits worked. He thought a lot about the spirits. They were the essence of nature. The wind, rain, animals, grass, mountains, rivers, and even rocks were represented by their own spirit. Keeping the spirits happy with respect and prayers affected the tribe in their everyday lives. If the spirits were happy, then the tribe would prosper as well. Their gods, Tafukt the sun and Ayur the moon, required more attention, especially from the shamans to whom they supposedly granted powers of magic. His tribe assembled on a regular basis to honor their gods with rituals and ceremonies as well as the occasional sacrifice of a new or harter beast during the solstices and full moons. Kulani assumed that the deities were pleased with the Amazon and continued to bless his tribe with a good life on the savannas and the places where his people roamed. He hoped it would always be so. The terrain transitioned to flat grassland the closer he came to his village. A strong gust of wind whipped over the tall green grass, bending it forcefully toward the southeast. Kulani shifted on the thick cloth strapped to Wind Dancer's flanks and glanced behind him. He would have to build a sturdy shelter for the calf he dragged behind him on the heavy litter, now that the poor animal had no mother to hide under. The mammoth was still sleeping, despite the bumpy ride, and Kulani could feel its contentment. It was strange that he was the only one in his village who had his unusual gift. Yes, his mother was a shaman, and she could use magic granted by the gods, except that the shamans didn't understand it either. Not really. They did understand that his gift involved a very specialized nature magic, not like the magic they could weave to control nature, but more passive, without requiring effort or concentration. It was simply a part of who he was. His special gift made him different from the other boys growing up in his tribe. Fortunately, his ability did not cause fear or contempt from his peers. Rather, they accepted his differences and respected him.
That was the nature of Emizin culture, accepting others' strengths and weaknesses and leaving it to the spirits to judge.
So much of their lives was dependent upon nature that they revered it in every form and abhorred any disruption that might affect the balance and anger their gods or any of the nature spirits who served them. In the distance, Kulani could make out the smoke from cooking fires. He would be in his village by late afternoon. He knew that his arrival with the mammoth in tow would turn a few heads, but no one would say anything about it. They had seen him drag in all manner of animals since he was a child. He wished he could hurry and get there more quickly. He knew the calf was not out of danger yet. He had only stopped the bleeding and worried that infection would set in if the wounds were not cleaned properly soon. But moving any faster would also endanger his charge, so he continued at a steady pace. Kulani distracted his minds with thoughts about the gathering at Tazalit Inha, City of Peace, that he would be attending for the first time this year.
He would not be alone, as several boys and girls who were coming of age would be attending for the first time, including Rabiku.
There would be a special ceremony at the gathering where he and the others would be honored as warriors, shamans, men, and women for the first time.
He was nervous about that part, since there would be no guarantee that he or Rabiku would be selected as warriors or even recognized as adults.
If he did have that fortune, then he would have the right to marry, own property, and vote at council meetings. That was all a few weeks away yet, and until then he would be considered a boy no matter his accomplishments. Approaching the outskirts of his village, Kulani came upon several boys only a few years younger than he who were taking turns wrestling in a circle of flattened grass. They were naked except for snug loincloths, and when they saw Kulani with his unusual cargo, they all ran over and excitedly pummeled him with questions. Kulani laughed at the cacophony of eager voices.
"Boys, boys! Quiet now, you will wake my new friend."
"What are you doing with it, Kulani?"
one of the older boys asked. He was clearly the alpha male of this group.
"Will you cook it tonight for the shamans?"
Kulani frowned at the boy. "You know better than that, Naruz.
I will look after him for a while until he is ready to return to the others." "I just wanted meat tonight," the boy replied, abashed.
"You will have meat, but not from this one. Rabiku is bringing enough for the entire village."
Naruz's expression brightened considerably.
"That is good news, Kulani. May I pet your friend?"
Kulani feigned indecision and then smiled. "Yes, you can. Be gentle. He was almost food for the jackals today." Naruz stepped to the mammoth calf and carefully laid his hand upon its thick fur. The place where he touched flickered with a sudden twitch and he jerked his hand back quickly.
The other boys laughed, then quieted immediately when Naruz cast a dark look in their direction.
Then he laid his hand on the animal again.
"He feels warm and wet."
"He likes your touch,"
Kulani assured him. Naruz looked confused.
"You said he was asleep."
"He is, and he takes comfort from a friendly touch."
Naruz nodded, and the other boys impatiently ran over and gently stroked the calf. Kulani studied Naruz carefully.
"The boy is learning his role well," he thought.
If Naruz wanted to lead the tribe one day, like his father the Amgar, he was well on his way. After allowing the boys to spend a few more moments with the calf, Kulani sent them away and continued into the village to seek out the healing shaman he knew would understand his need.
"What have you brought me this time?"
Frinya asked when Kulani walked into her hut.
"I have brought a mammoth calf, Frinya. It needs your help."
Frigna was one of the shamans who could heal and was considered an elder of the tribe. She was pretty for her age, as old as his mother would have been if she still lived. Her long silver hair fell over ebony shoulders, and her light grey eyes conveyed a mystical appearance. She wore a silk and raffia dress the length of her lean body, and stacks of metal jewellery on her arms and ankles. The jewellery chimed lightly against each other when she moved. Frigna followed Kulani to the litter holding the mammoth calf. She knelt next to the quiet animal and put one hand on its head and another on its chest. She closed her eyes to concentrate on the spells Kulani knew. By the slight movement of her lips and the feel of static electricity in the air, she must be casting. He sat down on the other side of the calf and waited. With every minute that passed, he could sense the calf's condition improving, and with the improvement came relief. A long while later, Frigna opened her eyes, and Kulani was startled to realize he was staring directly into them from the other side of the calf.
"He will live," she said. "Now let him rest. You can release him to me now."
Kulani was always unsettled when she told him that. She knew as well as he that he held and strengthened the life force of the injured animals he brought to her, never giving it an effort beside his will to do it. He had to make a conscious effort to release his hold on the animal, and felt a little weakness afterward.
"Now go," she said. "I will send word in the morning about his condition."
She stroked the mammoth gingerly with the backs and palms of her hands, like a mother with an infant child. It surprised him a little to see her act this way, since she had never raised children of her own. Shamans almost never did. Kulani rose and carefully untied the litter from his horse, trying not to disturb the sleeping calf.
"Thank you, Frigna."
Kulani bent and kissed her on the forehead before he turned to leave. Frigna simply nodded in reply. The village was situated on the grassy savanna in the midpoint of the Shad River between the mountain ranges Uari Samal to the north and Uari Janub to the south. The tribe settled here several years ago and expected to stay only a few more seasons before following herd migration trends to a new home on the Ibaribi, Sea of Grass. Kulani walked his horse along the wide dirt paths arranged in rough streets and past the uneven rows of simple grass and reed huts his people lived in. Most huts were only one- or two-room dwellings, while a few were larger and more elaborate, with as many as a dozen rooms. Huts were built to accommodate the size of a family rather than one station within the tribe. As he led his horse home, the sense of cooking stew, baking bread, and roasting vegetables was making him hungry. There were several large open huts without walls where the communal cooking took place in ovens, open fires, and grills situated around the village. He could also smell the fragrance of wood drying in kilns just outside the cooking huts, wood that would fuel the cooking in a few weeks. Kulani had not walked far when he heard a commotion at the eastern edge of the village, near where he was. At first he thought maybe an aurochs had escaped its pen, causing trouble, until he heard the lilting wail from a woman, and then another, and another. A chill ran up his spine. Something terrible had happened. Tying his horse's simple bone and leather bridle to a nearby post, he joined the flow of his people running toward the disturbance. In his haste, he neglected to bring the bow and leather quiver that was strapped to his horse, so he pulled his long curved dagger in case there was danger. Other tribesmen ran next to him carrying spears, axes, or bows, and he knew that he was in good company. Imazean men were trained with weapons from the time they could walk. Any one of them was equally proficient on foot or on horseback with the weapons they carried. When he arrived at the edge of the village, he was greeted by the sight of his tribe's people surrounding the remains of four bodies on the ground. The women were still making a ruckus, and he found it hard to hear what was being said, but by the look of the deceased men, it was clear they had all been ravaged by a beast with fearsome claws. Kulani recognized the men as members of a hunt pack led by a man named Bocchus. He was not among the dead. Just then the crowd went silent, even the wailing women, and they parted to allow the Amgar, chief of the tribe, pass through.
"Where is Bocchus?" the Amgar demanded.
He was a commanding figure, a little more heavily muscled than the younger men, and tall. A man a few years older than Kulani rose from the edge of the crowd and stepped forward.
"I am here, Amgar." "What has happened?"
Bocchus bowed his head in shame before he replied.
"We were attacked by a long tooth in the Ibaribi.
It killed these men and wounded others before we could drive it off. The Amgar briefly showed alarm before his stern visage returned.
The Iberibi? You were not in the mountains?
No, Amgar. The Longtooth attacked my hunt pack in the open savannah in the daylight. I cannot explain why.
These men are your responsibility, Barkus. The Amgar spoke in a quiet, almost consoling voice. See to their families, and proper burial. I will consult the elders about this tragedy.
The Amgar did not wait for a response. He turned and walked away with purpose. Kulani was stunned. Why would a Longtooth attack an armed hunt pack in full daylight? And why was the beast in the Iberibi to begin with? Certainly, the Longtooth was a fearsome lion nearly the size of his horse, with fangs the length of his dagger, but they never left the mountains, never. And they would never attack an armed group of men, especially during the day. They only hunted at night. It didn't make sense. He waited for the families of the dead to arrive and claim their sons and husbands. When they were done, Kulani approached Bacchus.
"Honored Bacchus," Kulani began. Clearly upset, Bacchus turned on him in anger.
"I am not honored today, Kulani. I have failed my hunt pack, and they will probably not follow me again."
Kulani knelt before the leader of the hunt pack in a show of respect. "It was not your fault, Bacchus. Something is not right with the Longtooth. Think about it, Bacchus. What you said about it doesn't make sense."
Kulani stood and took Bacchus's arm in his hands.
"Remember my gift."
Bacchus turned to Kulani, tears welling in his eyes.
"You are right, young leader. The Longtooth was not itself. It has a taste for the flesh of men, and it will kill here next."
"Why do you think so, Bacchus?"
"Because the only reason it left any of us alive was so it could follow us back to the village with our injured and dead.